You're listening to Yesterday's Dropouts. I'm Kavita Kadoza. I was telling a friend about some of the adult students I had met, and she said, "That's a fabulous story." But she said it like it was just that, a story from 10,000 miles away that would never affect her life personally. But I was learning it does. In many, many ways, we all pay a high price for low literacy.
Could you give me
just outside Washington, D.C., at the offices of the Literacy Council of Montgomery County, Maryland, Jason White is learning to read.
Kids won't go out in the rain, R-A-I-N.
I mean, I try pretty hard. I feel like it's so much, so many letter combinations, there's so many things to take in.
White grew up in Louisiana and dropped out in the 11th grade. He's 35 and has worked all over the country as a construction worker, even though he struggled to read. At a restaurant, he'd say, "I'll have the same thing my friend is having," because he couldn't read the menu. He'd ask for directions based on landmarks because he couldn't read street signs. And after work, he'd spend hours with the dictionary, getting ready for a routine visit to the permit office.
I would look up or write down every word I think I would need to spell. If I were changing a support beam, we would write, you know, support beam, change, existing, all the words you think you would need so you don't get in a spot. Because if everybody's adults and you're the only guy that can't spell, how do you, you know, ask for help? You know, you don't let nobody know.
For many years, White couldn't even tell his wife. His tough guy facade crumbles when he talks about the frustration of not being able to read and the fear of someone finding out. And his lack of education has finally caught up with him. He hasn't been able to get his contractor's license and advance in his career.
So it's like being a very good fireman, but you're not really a fireman, you know? I'm very handy, but I'm technically not a contractor until I pass that exam.
In one sense, White is far luckier than most dropouts, who are more than twice as likely as high school graduates to be unemployed. And Stephen Fuller, an economist at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, says even when they do get hired, it often means low-end jobs, part-time or seasonal. Fuller says the whole economy suffers when so many adults have limited skills.
You train a worker and they go to work, earn money, they spend their money, support other jobs, they pay their taxes. And so the return on investment, if it's done right, is extremely high.
Many advocates say adult education looks expensive until you look at the alternative. Spending money on unemployment checks, food stamps, and subsidized housing. There's also incarceration costs. Adults who are poorly educated or lacking job skills are far more likely to end up behind bars.
We find that about half of the people who come to prison didn't finish high school.
That's Stephen Stewart, who heads the Correctional Education Association, an advocacy group for educators in jails and prisons. He says research shows inmates enrolled in education programs while incarcerated were 40% less likely to return to prison compared to inmates who were not. Stewart says the majority of inmates will eventually be released, so funding educational programs should be common sense.
It's public safety, baby, you know. It's not a hard sell to tell a congressman, whether they're Republican or Democrat, that education reduces crime. But who wants to make the choice, we got to build another grade school or we're going to build a prison school?
Some adult educators say improving literacy rates would not only make for a safer and more prosperous country, but also a healthier one. Alice Marashelian runs the health education program at St. Mary Center in Washington, D.C. The clinic serves 25,000 patients each year, and she says the barrier between caregivers and patients who can't read, write, or speak is a huge problem every day.
We use illustrations for medicines. We would draw the sun and the moon as to when to take the medicine. Sometimes we help them put it in the pill boxes because they can't count either.
For some common conditions such as diabetes, the least compliant patients are the ones with low literacy. It's not that they resist medication. They just don't know how to measure the amount of insulin or don't understand a wrong dose could be fatal. Some researchers have estimated the cost of low health literacy at least $100 billion each year. And often, Marashelian says, the cost of a parent's low literacy is borne by children.
For example, giving cough syrup, measuring how much they might be overdosing their children, and it's absolutely unintentional. Or for asthma, some of these inhalers have the same color, so confusing the ones that are short-acting and long-acting also is a problem.
Marichellian says when children don't get better, doctors may increase the dosage of a drug or change the medication, thinking it's not working. There are more emergency room visits. Children have to miss school and parents take off from work. With a chronic condition, this could mean the child falls behind academically or the parent gets fired. At Literacy Partners, a nonprofit in New York City, immigrant mothers are sitting around and remembering what prompted them to join the program. Selina Begin from Bangladesh was motivated by a confusing conversation with her doctor.
They said, today your appointment is cancelled, but I heard cancer.
And she confused cancelled with cancer and started crying.
Then my husband said, why are you crying? I said, I have cancer. He said, no, your appointment is cancelled.
Everyone laughs, but they all have their own stories. And at this family literacy program, those stories usually involve children. Nubeck Woman is from Ecuador. She's here with her 17-year-old daughter, Vilma.
My kids, really, they don't want to pay attention when I didn't know English.
If she would attend to the parent teacher conference, she would just nod her head and leave.
I was afraid I didn't go.
7 years ago, Vilma and Nube joined this family literacy class, where they worked on reading skills separately and together. Research shows parental involvement improves a child's academic performance, resulting in higher test scores, better attendance, and improved graduation rates. And Vilma says that's exactly what happened.
And it just makes me more ambitious. It's like a race in my house. Who does the best?
Before, I didn't know how can I speak English. Now I can speak very well English.
So very well, in fact, that Nube, someone who was once scared to even enter her children's schools, has summoned up the courage to join her parent-teacher association.
And some parents, they nominate me to be parent representative in the class. I feel very, very proud of me.
Nubeck Woman is a success story. But what happens when we fail to achieve these goals with others? And not just immigrants to the US, but for all people struggling on the margins. Perhaps the biggest cost is one that can't be measured. It's the invisible cost of what might have been. The perfect person to explain this is Milton Whitley. He's 58 and just published his autobiography. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I let him tell his story about growing up in North Carolina.
When I'm in the first grade, I had a teacher named Miss Randolph. She used to spank me because I didn't know how to read. I believed that I were unteachable, and that hurts when you believe something about yourself like that.
Whitley dropped out of school, worked as a bricklayer, got married. All the while, he managed to hide his illiteracy. He would go to a store and pick items based on the pictures and colors.
I used to stay in the store so long and really might be picking up four items. I didn't know which milk was which, low-fat, whole milk, skim milk, goat milk. Oh, I just didn't know. When I found out about them tops, the red tops for whole milk, blue top for low-fat, and the green top for, you know, I stayed sad and angry.
He used drugs, spent time in jail, moved to a homeless shelter. Then one day he went to the dentist and asked the receptionist for help filling out forms.
I asked her three or four times, ma'am, I said, can you help me fill this form out? No, you have to do it yourself. That was about 10. And so got all the way up to about 3:30. I'm sitting there, you know, sweating bullets. And I asked her. She said, no. So I'm feeling worse and worse. I said, well, ain't nothing I can do but started checking. And I started doing random checks.
Whitley took the form back.
All the boxes were checked because I didn't know which one not to check. And she said out loud, you pregnant? I checked the box, said pregnant. And everybody laughed.
That was a turning point. At 52, Whitley found a tutor with the Literacy Council of Montgomery County and started learning to read. It's been a slow, hard slog, but now Whitley can read his medicine labels, he can write out checks, and he can keep up with the latest news on his beloved football team.
I love the Redskins so much. I know all the terminology, like offense, quarterbacks. So when I get the paper, you know, I don't have to skip some words and, you know, this might be this, that might be that. I can just read it all the way through.
He says that feeling is priceless.
I know I'm liberated now because I can read. I can write. When you can do things on your own like that, you're more free. It's beautiful. People are beautiful. And I'm not just happy. I'm happy, 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 happy.
That happiness is Whitley's hard-earned prize after years of heartache, a victory for the man who vividly remembers those spankings he received from his teacher. Looking at Whitley's life, it's easy to see what his inability to read has cost him. It's also easy to see why he and other students who do poorly in school, day after day, eventually give up and drop out. What they can't always see is that the path that follows is hard. A lifetime of dreams that lie just out of reach. It means a business not started, a song unwritten, a bedtime story never read. Even those who do go back to school often struggle to complete their studies and get a steady job. But for many of yesterday's dropouts, there's something else at stake as well. A chance to emerge from the shadows and finally be seen. You've been listening to Breaking Ground, Yesterday's Dropouts. Our producer is Tara Boyle. Special thanks to Mark McDonald, Memo Lyons, Karen Munson, and Kathleen Allenbaugh, along with Chris Lewis, Seth Liss, Kerry Moskal, Natasha Lim, and the rest of the WAMU digital team. Our interns are Eva Harder and Kelly Romando. Our theme music was composed by Greg Smith. We'd also like to thank Robin Kaler, Noel Gunther, and John Barth. This production is distributed by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, at prx.org. You can hear more about this program and find photos, videos, maps, and lots of extra reporting on adult literacy at our website, breakingground.wamu.org. And if you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can hear the whole hour there as well. Thanks for listening to Breaking Ground, Yesterday's Dropouts, a production of WAMU in Washington, D.C. I'm Kavitha Cardoza.
This project is a part of American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative to address the dropout crisis, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.